This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 212.
Yeah, episode 212. Now I get to be thrown off by the change.
Remember all those times when you would yell at me because I would repeat what you just said? You see how hard it is to say something meaningful and deep right after the introduction to the show?
Yes. I do.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And, unsurprisingly, I have a fact about the number 212.
Please share.
Apparently, and I didn't know this, I'm not in the world of fashion, there's a whole bunch of brands of clothes and makeup with the number 212 associated with them, which is weird. There's like 212 Sport, which is apparently some kind of like sports clothing line. I don't know, you can go to 212sport.com, but I also found the Carolina Herrera makeup line that starts with 212 as well.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of style stuff about 212. This Carolina Herrera stuff, there's 212 men, New York City, 212 sexy men, 212 sexy, 212 perfume,
what?
212 VIP. I don't know. It's crazy. It's all over the internet. Just do a search for 212 and you'll find it.
Okay.
Yep. 212 is also one of the area codes for Manhattan. It's actually one of the 86 original area codes assigned by AT&T in 1947.
Crazy.
Yeah, so all sorts of weird and crazy and interesting facts about the number 212.
And they all seem to be related. Cool.
I honestly don't know. Maybe they are. I have no idea.
I would guess they probably are.
So I guess we're not really sure about that, but there is one thing that we're sure about, and we are sure that we are thankful to our sponsor, First Move Financial, for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
How do you know if you're ready to retire? There's the financial aspect, but don't forget about the emotional and physical as well. What would you do with your time if you were retired? How many rounds of golf can you really play in a week? How are you going to stay physically fit? One way to see if you're ready for retirement and start to answer these and other questions is to take a practice retirement, where you use some vacation to stay at home.
How do we do that with the kids?
We're not ready to retire.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to sign up, whatever it took.
The idea here is you're not going to do anything special, just not working for a little while, which is different from the work at home we're basically all doing right now. See if you can find a rhythm you like in your day, but also realize that you need something to do, whether that's picking up a new hobby or volunteering with your time, because it's hard to just sit still. Make sure your vacation is long enough that you have time to get bored with just sitting around. Right now, that would have to be a very long vacation for me. Be ready, though. Retirement often tests even the best marriages. As couples spend more free time together, there's often friction, which you've likely already experienced a little if you're both working from home. If you want help reviewing the financial part of preparing for retirement, set up a time to talk to First Move Financial by going to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers today.
Thank you to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show. My recommendation, just play a lot of board games. You'll get through retirement just fine.
It's a great hobby. Takes up a lot of time.
Yes. So on this week of the Family Gamers Podcast, we are going to talk about something that we teased, I guess, in the Family Gamers Facebook community.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about food games. This is inspired by our daughter, Claire, who has been desiring to play more food games and starting to come up with some of her own, and helped along quite a bit by suggestions from the Family Gamers community. So we'll get to that in the second half of the show. But first, as always, let's talk about what we've been playing. So we're beginning to get into virtual school and eventually real physical school. So we've had a little bit less time for playing board games with the kids, but they are continuing the tradition of pulling out seemingly random games and asking to play them. So at our 6-year-old's request, we played Century Golem Edition. He has really enjoyed this game ever since he learned how to play. And it's not really surprising to me because his older brother was kind of the same way. After he played it one time, he was like, yes, please. Can we play this all the time?
Yeah, I actually kind of can't wait to get the next one in the series, which is out, but I think it was out of print for a while, and I think it's back, and we just haven't sprung for it.
I really like the simplicity of it. There's a little bit more going on in terms of engine building than like a Splendor, but it's still very manageable for a gamer kid to get into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a fun game.
We also played some Tang Garden.
We did. I really enjoy how beautiful this game is. And, you know, we've talked about this game on the show a bunch of times. I really do think that there's more to this game than just playing a game.
Yeah, the gameplay itself, there's a little bit of clever puzzle there, but the overall, like, structure of playing the game is not anything new and innovative and crazy. But the idea that the entire purpose of the game is to build this beautiful garden, and you do it with all these beautiful components, and you're scoring on how beautiful it is in certain ways and in, like, from certain perspectives, is really cool.
Yeah, it's a game that really ends up being more than a sum of its parts, because we've played games like Saikatsu, where everybody has the same common game board, but depending on the perspective from which you look at that game board, you could score differently. And Saikatsu's not the only game that does this kind of thing. But it's certainly an example of that. In Tang Garden, as you place these characters that you have control over or possession of, or whatever the appropriate term is, you're scoring based on the perspective of the character depending on the way the character is looking and what they see. There's even things like if the Empress sees the Emperor, you lose points. If the Emperor is in the line of sight of the Empress, and the reason why is because if the Empress sees the lady, you also lose points. And so there's a love triangle in this game without there being a narrative in this game, which is really cool. It's just expressed through the perspective of the character based on the victory points that you get at the end of the game, which is just a really neat idea. I also love the fact that every single piece in this game is super, super colorful, except for the game board, which is white. And so as you play the game, you're filling it in with all of this rich, vibrant color.
We're going to talk about this more when we do our full written review, but Tang Garden is really pushing the boundaries of board games as art.
Mm-hmm. Definitely is. And I think we're going to be reviewing this pretty soon.
Yeah. Hey, Andrew, it was your birthday this week. You're old now.
Don't tell anyone. I've been old for a while. I've been old on the inside a lot longer than I've been old on the outside, but I've been old for a while. But one thing we did do on my birthday, I went and I got a game from the shelf of opportunity. I grabbed a two-player game because I wanted to put the kids to bed and then play a board game. And we played Akrotiri from Z-Man Games.
So I could not shake the feeling that I have played this game before, but if I have, it was long before I started recording gameplays. So okay. I don't have any idea where I was when I played it before.
Sure.
Some convention somewhere, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really neat game. It's a little weird to me that it's only a two-player game, because it definitely feels like it could be more, but I think they kept it a two-player game for that push and pull of really tight gameplay. I think with three or four, it might go from push and pull to chaotic.
Well, so I can understand why you feel like this is a game that should be for more than two players. I mean, the premise of the game is that you are sailing across the Aegean Sea, trading goods and excavating temples.
Yeah, so you're laying tiles that create the map as mm-hmm. you go. And you can only follow the approved trading paths, basically.
Right. And I mean, I think there's something in this that's a lot like Tobago, which is maybe something that was hitting that I feel like I've played this before, because
yeah.
you can only place a temple if, again, from your perspective, because it's different from the other person's perspective, if from your perspective, certain elements appear on the map in certain places. And so if I want to play a temple down, say, it will say I have to have, fire, which is the red element to the left. I have to have water above. It's not cardinal direction. It's just relative to where I'm sitting. And then like forest to the right of the island that I want to put this thing on. And so it's a really neat way that the puzzle of excavating the temples or building the temples or whatever it's called is generated as you lay out the tiles, and you can manipulate the map, not the stuff that's already on the map, but you can manipulate how you want the map to be laid out when you play your tiles based on what you know you have in your hand in order to fulfill the requirements so that you can build the temples that you have. And I just think it's really a cool dynamic. It starts off a little bit slow because you have to figure out how to get some money, but because it's a two-player game, it's not like you're waiting a long time for your turn to come around again.
Yeah, it's not all that slow. And this is a game in which placing the tiles affects several different things, then that's always going to be in your head. Placing tiles opens up more resources that can be harvested and traded for money, but it also has these symbols that you want to determine where you can put temples, and it's got trade routes. So you might also look at it in effect and say, well, if I put this trade route this way, I can get around where my opponent is blocking me, or I can get to this island I could never get to before.
So there's also asymmetric goal cards that each player has. One of the goal cards that I had was building temples on islands that were not directly connected to the main island in the game that you start with. So I actually really had to pay attention to the way those routes were going down because I didn't want them to connect to an island that wasn't previously directly connected. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So it was really a huge part of my strategy. And that actually gets into what you were saying after we finished the game.
Right. We weren't too far into the game when I realized you were playing a lot more strategically than me, but I couldn't really see what your strategy was. I just knew that it definitely did not match up with what I was doing. This is also a game where the appearance of who's winning can be really deceptive.
That's true. You ran out of temples, which is how you complete the game. And because you were the second player, once you built your last temple, the game was immediately over.
Right. That's when I revealed to you that I could tell you were playing strategically, and I was looking for ways to get temples up as quickly as possible to see if I could halt your run for points before you got out ahead of me without knowing how many points either one of us had.
Right. And I was looking at it, and I was like, I literally said, I was like, there's no point in counting, you've won. Because you had six temples completed, and every temple gives you victory points. And I had, I think, four temples done. But by the time we counted out all the points, we tied.
We were tied. It was kind of amazing.
I felt like kind of an idiot, actually, after that. I'll be honest with you.
But that was a lot of fun. This is the kind of game, there's a lot of hidden information, so it's probably not going to work real well with a parent and a younger child. But if you've already got kids who can appreciate some strategy and depth in their games, I'm sure I could sit down with, say, Asher and play this game, and I'm sure he would enjoy it, although there would also be moments of frustration because that's baked into the game as well.
There's going to be a lot of observation training, I'll say, in this game, because kids are going to try to place temples where they can't. And
adults try to place temples where they can, and then we call each other on it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I think you're going to find that a little bit more with kids, where they're learning the art of observation and figuring out the dynamics of stuff like that. So that can be a good thing. I mean, it can be good to work through that kind of stuff with a child. So I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that that's definitely something that might come up in a game like this.
And that game was Acroteri from Z-Man Games.
Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. I think we're going to keep it for a while.
I think so, too. In advance of our snap review for Marvel Battleworld, I had Asher teach me how to play. So that I knew how to take pictures.
Yeah, this is a game that I played with him a bunch.
He has definitely enjoyed playing it by himself a bunch and with his little brother a bunch.
Which is awesome.
Which is great. I think we'll include the snap review in today's show, so I won't belabor the point, but it's just cute and fun and light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like the little figurines. I gotta be honest with you, I think they're great. We also played one final game of City Skylines before the review came out last Monday.
I forgot this one on my list. I'd already put it out of my mind.
So we've talked about City Skylines before. We talked about it with a couple of our guests, etc., etc. This is a difficult game. City Skylines is published by Cosmos. It is a city building game. It very much takes a lot from the video game of the same name.
but we discovered a secret.
I don't know if it's a secret. The rule book tells you how to play the game, and then it doesn't say, don't ever play it like this again, which it should say.
Yeah, it says, once you're comfortable doing these basic rules, move on to the scenarios. Guess what? Almost all of the cards and abilities involved in the scenarios make the game easier.
Substantially easier. So our highest score in this game, without scenarios and extra asymmetric roll cards and stuff, was a 5.
And then we played it on, not the first scenario, but I think the second scenario, because we looked and we said, yeah, we could do this. And we got something in the 20s.
Yep.
Like, and it felt like a huge accomplishment. Technically, that's still a losing score, but that's okay.
But it's
okay.
Only barely a losing score as opposed to a ha-ha-ha-ha-ha score.
And we actually, you know, successfully finished the game, which almost every other time we haven't been able to do. So other than that, I think Cities Skylines is well put together, and it is a difficult game, but it would have been a lot less difficult had we known the scenarios are so important to the gameplay.
Yeah, they're pretty much critical to the game. You have one learning game that you throw away where you figure out the mechanics, and then you never play that way ever again. Ever. So that's Cities Skylines from Cosmos. You can head over to thefamilygamers.com to check out the review of that. Finally, we had dinner with some friends who are very much not gamers, but we brought over Similo, and they really liked it.
Our kids were fighting over who got to be the clue giver. It was kind of cute.
We won twice, and then we got to the second to last round on the third game, and we didn't quite make it.
It was entertaining because all of us who were guessing were debating with each other. Do we eliminate this one? Do we eliminate this one? Whatever, blah, blah, blah. We finally make our decision, and Claire, who was giving the clues, was like, oh no, you eliminated the wrong one as your first choice in this round. And I just didn't want to say anything.
She played it straight, though. I got to give her
credit. She did a great job. I have two more quick ones. Kid Bowling has started back up, and that means I get special game time on some Saturday mornings again.
With your gaming buddy.
With my gaming buddy. Without having to worry about doing it in the middle of school and everything else. So we played a game of Cloud City today.
Mm-hmm.
I am really enjoying the puzzling nature of this and the fact that it's pretty light. There's a lot of pieces there, but it's actually a pretty quick setup and tear down. And just you get into it, start playing, start building your towers, start building your little walkways.
Yeah, so this game is from Blue Orange. This is a game that is a lot like the Baron Park Monorails. I think it's basically impossible to avoid that comparison.
I mean, they're both by Phil Walker Harding.
That's
so
true.
That makes sense.
I like Baron Park as a game more, but it's definitely more complex. So if you want something lighter, Cloud City might be where it's at. I will say this, though. That insert is trash.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
It's not good. It is really, really not good. It's way too small for, like, there's supposed to be this removable thing that you can leave on the table, but it's totally wrong sized. It's just bad news. So that's kind of unfortunate.
But the game itself is good, yep. And we're just putting most of the stuff in baggies instead of really using the insert as it's intended, and that's okay.
I guess it only really bothers me because they were like, hey, here's this handy thing that you can use, and it's bad.
It's not handy.
Exactly. It's like, just don't bother. And the fact that they did almost bugs me even more.
Sure.
I don't know.
And one last one that I played with him, Encore, also known as Nakmal, which Nick had reviewed quite a while back now, almost a year ago, I think. And we played it, and I really liked it. Unsurprisingly, mm-hmm. Nick really liked it too. It was highly recommended.
Looks like we have to make a little bit more room on our Roll and Write shelf.
We sure do.
All right.
And that's it for this week. It was a lighter week, as we said, because school and dealing with all of the stress and other things that brings.
All right. Well, I have a guest appearance by For Science this week.
Okay.
We got this thing.
You say it like it's this crazy thing. I was at the grocery store, I don't know how many weeks ago now. I always look at what's on clearance on the shelf, and there was this thing called Cheez-It Duos.
Yeah, so I think that For Science, pretty much always should shop off the clearance shelf, because that's where all the weird stuff is. It's great. So this week on For Science, I have these Cheez-It Duos. It's caramel popcorn and classic cheddar Cheez-Its. And it's not like you open the box and there's two bags inside and whatever. It was one bag and they were just flat out mixed together. I gotta be honest with you, these were really good.
I figured that out when I was like, huh, what happened to this box of Cheez-Its that I thought wasn't opened? And it was gone.
Okay, in my defense, when I found it, it was only a quarter full.
Yeah, I'm sure it was mostly the children who did it.
Yeah. But I definitely took care of that last quarter of the box.
This is a for science, highly recommend.
Yeah, I would say highly recommend the Cheez-It Duos, caramel popcorn and cheddar cheese. Sweet and salty, it says. And who knows, maybe if you're as lucky as us, you can also get it for 50% off. Anyway, that is for science.
So that's it for our first half. I think we're going to take a break.
All right.
We'll give you that snap for Marvel Battle World.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back and talk about food games.
After that for science, I'm getting kind of hungry.
Food, glorious food.
We'll be right back.
Come on, I just need to hit hard enough.
Good job, Captain America. I think we might be able to rescue Goose yet. Let me see if I can deal the final blow.
Good job, Doctor Strange.
We've done it. We've rescued Goose from the Thanos Stone. This is a snap review for Marvel Battle World: Mystery of the Thanos Stones. Marvel Battle World is a die-rolling combat game published by Funko Games. Battleworld supports 1 to 4 players ages 6+, and a game usually lasts between 10 and 30 minutes. In Marvel Battleworld, you play as some really unique heroes, like Doctor Strange, trying to uncover the mystery of the Thanos Stones and free your friends. You do this through die-rolling combats. Don't let those enemies win.
Artistically, Marvel Battleworld is a departure from the more mature-themed Marvel superhero content we've seen recently. The characters are almost chibi representations of the heroes you know and love, but what's really cool are all the alternate characters in the game. From Spider-Ham to Zombie Mysterio, Doctor Strange to Valkyrie Gamora. But this weirdness plays well into the art and design style of the game. It's funky and cool. Every character has an inch and a half tall figure along with a card with its abilities. The production quality is great.
The game is made up of a series of hexagon locations that players move their characters to. They're placed, essentially randomly to start the game. Once a player moves their character to a location, they fight whatever is there. It's just printed on the tile, you flip it over. Fighting is as simple as rolling a 12-sided die and adding or subtracting based on the modifiers on the locations and on the characters that might affect the fight. It's super basic and it's super luck-based, but what that means is it's really fun to play with your kids or for kids to play together. This is absolutely an opportunity to trick your younger gamers into learning some basic arithmetic skills.
This is the kind of fun math I like.
Despite the deeper plays into the board game space Funko has been making lately with titles like Pan Am, it was clear from the get-go that Marvel Battleworld straddled the line between toys and games. In fact, they straddled the line so well, we thought the Thanos Stone blind boxes were just that, blind boxes. We opened the box for the game, and our kids tore right into them. Don't let them do this. Releasing heroes from the Thanos Stones is actually part of the first game or two that you play, so you don't want them opening those orange Thanos Stone boxes until the right time.
We could tell right away that this game was going to be a much more silly take on the Marvel Universe. Characters like Howard the Duck and Goose showing up are a good hint that might be the case. We definitely did not expect a serious gameplay with these characters. And we got a light gameplay.
So I mentioned the blind box Thanos Stones. Don't open them. Some of the tiles are Thanos Stone tiles when you first defeat one. Only then are you supposed to open the box. Once both heroes were rescued from the Thanos Stones, or in the case of our kids, mercilessly torn from their styrofoam cocoons the second the package was open. Right, Asher?
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot more to discover in the game, which made the title Mystery of the Thanos Stones feel a little bit hollow. It doesn't take away from the cooperative battle nature of the game or anything like that, but it feels like there should be a narrative in a Marvel game, and there really wasn't one.
Oh, Dad, one more thing.
Okay.
The box isn't very good for storage. It's the kind of box where you buy the box, and then you don't store anything in the box because it's not very good for storage, but you just keep collecting and collecting and collecting. Sort of like Pokemon cards or Magic cards, and you just want to keep collecting. But if they gave you, like, a decent box, then when your box is full, you'd be like, oh, my box is full. I guess I can't collect any more characters.
So what you're saying is you need a storage solution for Marvel Battleworld that isn't the box that the game comes in.
Basically, yes.
All right, good to know. And I need to talk about this part. As parents, we have to mention the fact that you're buying characters in blind boxes. This is actually Series 1, and there are 30 characters on the back of this mega pack that we have in front of us. If you've ever had a collector in your family, you know what this means. You can buy a 2-character blind box for $10, or you can buy a 6-character mega pack for $25. But they're still blind boxes.
But hey, the characters are pretty well made, and if you don't feel like playing the game, you can just play with the characters. But still, the game is pretty fun.
For a nice cooperative entry-level battle game with high-quality figures that represent interesting and unique characters in the well-known Marvel Universe, we give Marvel Battleworld Mystery of the Thanostones
3 unopened Thanostones out of 5.
And that's Marvel Battleworld
in a snap.
And we're back.
Okay. So when we started doing research for this show, I was frankly stunned at how many food and food-adjacent games we have reviewed, how many food and food-adjacent games we own. There's a significant overlap, obviously, in that list.
We own a lot fewer than we've reviewed.
That's true. That's true. But I was also pleasantly encouraged by all of the awesome backtalk/feedback we got when posting about food themes games in the Family Gamers community at facebook.com/groups/FamilyGamersAA.
So, yeah, you want to get right in with the backtalk?
Absolutely. Well, let's do this. Okay. If you go to thefamilygamers.com and search for food, or you go to thefamilygamers.com/tag/food, you will see all of these games. We have reviewed over 20 games about food.
It's kind of crazy.
And there's more coming. I mean, let's talk about, for example, we've got Pop-Tarts. We're going to arrange this ridiculous for science thing around all of the different flavors of Pop-Tarts, which are in the game Pop-Tarts.
There's only 5 in the game.
Yeah, but then I have to eat
all 5.
Toasted and a frozen of all 5. And it's probably all going to happen in one for science segment, so it's going to be
probably
kind of rough, actually.
Maybe
I'll get the kids involved. But anyway.
You can have
a
little portion.
The point is, there's a lot of food-themed games out there. And when you think food, you don't necessarily have to think of games that have the word food in them, although there are some of those as well. But man, there's a lot.
The last time we talked about food games, we talked about really, really little kid-friendly food games, for the most part, except for Viticulture.
Yep, so that was episode 146, Top 5 Family Food Games.
This time around, we want to talk about ones that are at least a little bit more grown up in theme, if not in difficulty.
Yeah, I think we're still going to talk about some of the games that are on this list because we still love some of these games, but
yes,
there's a lot more that we are going to talk about.
I think that's fair. But first, let's do some back talk. There were a ton of suggestions when we asked our Facebook community, what's your favorite food game? And a lot of people who gave us multiple games. So I understand that not being able to choose a single favorite. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So Heather Buffington gave us 2 games that are basically related to food trucks. One is a regular food truck and one is an ice cream food truck in Food Truck Champions and Rocky Road a la Mode.
What's funny is I looked up a review on Food Truck Champion and there's a lot of similarity in how it's set up to Rocky Road a la Mode. The big difference is Rocky Road a la Mode has multi-use cards, but it's a little bit simpler, and you actually go around the little track that's set up, and it's always whoever's in last place gets to take the next turn.
Yeah, Rocky Road a la Mode is done by Green Couch, and their kind of MO is like the filler plus game, so it's not going to be something that's super heavy or whatever. It's something that you'd be able to probably get through in like 25 to maybe 35 minutes.
Yeah, Food Truck Champion looks a little bit longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a similar idea of you're doing set collection, you're filling orders, you've got multi-use cards that can be your action type, which is like manager or line cook or things like that. You can pull in new employees, all kinds of crazy stuff. One thing I thought was super cool looking at the review is that when it's not your turn, you can play a card that matches the active player's action they chose and then do the same action. There's like 5 different roles available, basically.
Mm-hmm. I like that because it keeps people engaged in the game.
Yeah, it really keeps it moving. And if you can't or don't want to match the action, instead you get to draw 4 new cards. So this seems like the kind of game where you end up with a big old handful pretty quickly.
She also mentioned Fabled Fruit. This is a game published by Stronghold.
It's a Friedman Freeze.
It is a Friedman Freeze game, which is why all the words start with F. It was a Spiel des Jahres recommended game in 2017. So this is a set collection worker placement game all centered around fruit.
I've heard of it. It looks pretty good.
Hmm?
Our writer, Nick Martinelli, suggests Food Fighters.
As does Helena Capel, who we're so glad that she's in the community. Helena is, of course, part of Kids Table Board Games, who publish Food Fighters.
Which is really cute. It's a two-player battle game where it's two different teams of food fighting against each other. It's mm-hmm. adorable.
All different takes on food games on the Family Gamers yes. podcast.
He also recommends Sushi Roll. Mm-hmm. As
we love the Sushi Roll / Sushi Go family of games from Game Right.
Walk on Fire. I've heard a lot of good things about that one. And Burger Up. So Burger Up is a game where I guess you layer cards to have the biggest, best burger with the most ingredients in it.
I mean, I am 100% on board for that. Bruce Vogue, who can forget Bruce Vogue, recommended three games. He recommended Wasabi, Saffronito, and New York Slice.
So I just had to look up Saffronito because I had never heard of it before. It is a dexterity strategy game about throwing coins to bid for various Indian spices so that you can get the spices you need to fill orders for like the Raj or something like that.
Okay, so I'm clicking through on BGG and I'm going to say number one, it looks like the box is way too big for the components. Number two, I am on board with anything that involves Indian food.
100%. Me too. And I have to admit, I was looking at this and meanwhile, Claire was looking over my shoulder and said, New York Slice, that's a great game. Why don't we have that game, Mom? And I had to kind of shrug my shoulders because New York Slice is a great game.
So I played New York Slice at PAX Unplugged 2017 and it was fine. It's a remake of a cake slice, like, I Split You Choose game. It was fine.
It's one of the better I Split You Choose games out there, in my opinion.
I guess so. I mean, I really loved the theming of that game. I'll say that much right away. The score pad looked like a server's like order pad, which I thought mm-hmm. was really, really clever. And the components, like the slices of pizza, were actual photographs of pizza.
Yeah, they're like photorealistic. It makes me...
They were photorealistic because they were actual pictures of pizza.
It makes me hungry when I look at the game.
It does make me hungry. I think I just am not a big I Split You Choose guy. And I've run into that a few times before. We talked about this with like Sunday Split and with Zooscape and a couple other things. So I guess that mechanic just really isn't my ballgame, except for Spy Master, which I liked.
And Tussie Mussie.
Okay, sure. I like Tussie Mussie. Tussie Mussie is probably my favorite I Split You Choose game. But getting back to New York Slice, it's fine. It does its job. If you really like I Split You Choose, it's definitely a game to consider. But we're talking about Saffronito, because it's on my screen, and now I want Indian food. Chrissy Whistler recommended Just Desserts. This is a game from Looney Labs, the makers of Flux. We've seen her talk about this several times. It looks really, really cute.
I've seen her talk about it a bunch of times and how she's used it a lot in learning with her kids. There's something about putting together dessert orders and matching them up with customers. And the goal here is to make a set of customers for whom you've fulfilled orders. So that seems pretty neat. Apparently, it's got a little bit of take that, but not so much that it is going to ruin the game if you're playing with youngins.
Yep, 2 to 5 players, 8 plus. Game lasts around a half an hour. So definitely something to take a look at if you like those dessert games. That might be something for Claire.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Derek Bruff also recommended Rocky Road a la Mode and Go Nuts for Donuts, which is a game
favorites.
That we love. And, of course, Sushi Go. We already mentioned Sushi Roll, part of that same sushi insert word here series from Game Right.
Yep. Courtney White also said Sushi Go is her favorite food game. But she thinks her family hasn't played very many. Courtney, you might be surprised if you go back and look, because I certainly was. It feels like we don't play that many food games, and then I found out I was wrong.
Just read through the list of games that we've reviewed, and you've probably played a few of them.
But she said she really wants to try Truffle Shuffle, so I had to look this one up. This is a brand new game. It looks like it's pyramid-style drafting. If we've ever talked about Seven Wonders Duel, it's that idea. Some are face up, some are face down, but they're in a pyramid-type stack, so you can only take a few at a time. And your goal is to create these almost poker-like sets, you know, runs or three of a kind or all the same color, whatever. Obviously, the better of a set you can build, the more points you can get. And some of the cards are special, let you change stuff around. One of the big catches is that at the end of every round of the game, you have to discard from your hand down to the number of players. So like in a four-player game, you would go back down to four cards. So if you haven't already scored the sets you've been trying to build in your hand, too bad, you lost them.
Mm. So this is a pretty straightforward set collection game to make those runs and things like that. So that's pretty easy to score out and plan and things like that. You even get a really nice player aid that provides all of the different symbols and what they all mean, and then what all the different kinds of sets score out to. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah, and the illustrations of the chocolate truffles look pretty appetizing.
Mm-hmm. I think pretty much any picture of chocolate.
Chocolate.
You know what? Never mind. Seeing as the poop emoji was originally supposed to be a chocolate swirl emoji, I'm not going to say that.
Most pictures of chocolate. Last but not least, our longtime listener Peter Ellis recommended Morels.
Okay, so Morels is a two-player set collection hand management game about collecting mushrooms or fungi in the forest. And I played this at a board game cafe that I went to a couple of years ago. And I really wanted to like it. I mean, the art is nice, if a little bit dated, but that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I don't know. This is a perfect example of a game that I need to go back to and play again, because so many people say that this game is good and it fell super flat for me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not really sure, but Morels is a, like I said, card drafting, hand management, set collection game. It's not super complicated. It would be considered a family weight game. It's published by Two Lanterns Games.
And Peter Ellis also mentioned some games about growing food, like Bonanza and Rakeholt.
Okay, so if we're including growing games, does that mean that, like, Agricola's got to be on the list?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. I remember when Rakeholt came out, that game looks beautiful. Have you ever seen a picture of the box for this game?
I have, but I don't know anything else about it.
Looks
it's something
so nice.
About like a pasture or a field or
it's
something.
It's like a
like
Thomas
that.
Kincaid painting, practically.
Wow.
It looks fantastic. So I definitely recommend, if you like high art in your games, to check out Rakeholt.
On the other hand, Bonanza is super cartoony. And much like your experience with Morels, the one time I got to play it, it just fell flat for me. Like, everybody else around me was really enjoying it. And I was just like,
I know, right?
Fine.
I know.
And that happens sometimes. So that's one of the reasons why we're here, because not every game is for everybody.
Mm. Okay, so I have two more games that I want to talk about that I don't have, that we don't have, before we start talking about some of the other games that are on this table in front of us. These games could not possibly be more different.
Okay, go for it.
All right, so the first one, for all you hardcore gamers out there, is Food Chain Magnate. This is a splatter game. It's super complicated. BGG's weighting on this is 4.2 out of 5. This is a game where three turns in, if you know what you're doing, you're going to know whether you're going to win or lose. And I know a lot of
Yikes.
People don't like games like that. Yeah, this is a 2 to 4 hour game.
Yikes.
Where you are trying your best to become a food chain magnate and run your fast food chain the best. There's card drafting, there's income management, there's a market, modular boards, simultaneous action selection. This game has everything. I mean, everything.
That is a lot to pack all into one game.
That's why it's a 2 to 4 hour game. And frankly,
Fair.
If you are playing this for the first time, it's probably a 6 hour game. This is a pick up lunch, eat together with your friends, start playing the game, finish the game, have dinner.
Okay.
That's the kind of game that this is. It's not super artsy. It's pretty utilitarian, to be perfectly honest with you. There's a little bit of almost that like 50s diner style art associated with this game. But yeah, it's very complicated, and it's a commitment, but it's also super fun.
All right, so tell me about your other choice.
So the other one is a game that when I went to Dice Tower Con a couple of years ago, I don't know if I posted the video on the Family Gamers Facebook page. I think I did, but this is Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000.
Oh, I remember you talking about this.
This game is great. So there's a bowl in the center of the table, and everybody has a set of chopsticks, and everybody has their own little like tray. Like you think of if you go to a teppanyaki place, they've got those little trays they put the sauce in. Everybody has a tray like that. So you take these 25 objects. There's 5 different shapes, and each shape, there's 5 different colors. And you pour them into the bowl in the middle. Then you shuffle all the tokens face down, or you put them in a bag. And then you either flip one over if they're face down, or you pull one out of the bag and reveal it. So the tokens have on them a picture of an object in a certain color, or it could be like the rainbow color, which means any of them. And so what everybody is trying to do is get into the bowl and get the objects with their chopsticks. And these are like wooden chunky objects, so they're really hard to pick up. They're kind of slick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And pick them up and put them in their dish. Now, the thing is that until the piece is in the dish, it's technically not safe. So you can hypothetically be like stabbing at another person's...
You can try to knock it out of other people's chopsticks?
Yeah, even though it's like impossible to hold on to these things. And so it's just this like insane, like stabby thing to get these things out.
So kind of like sticky chameleons, except with chopsticks instead of sticky tongues.
Yeah, and way harder to get the thing.
Well, yeah.
So, in the three-player game, all players must grab all of the pieces which are either the shape or the color shown on the token. Whoever grabs the most objects wins the token, but in a tie, the exact thing that's on the token is like the tiebreaker. So, if the token is a purple square, right, you want all the purples, all the squares. And if there's a tie... the person who has the purple square wins the tiebreaker.
Got it.
Assuming they're involved in the tie. It's just very silly and goofy and crazy. And there's been a couple of different versions of it. There's ones with simple shapes. And then like the official Chopstick Dexterity Mega Challenge 3000 has like little S things, which I guess are supposed to be, I don't know, snails or something. And then like
tentacles,
tubes. And I don't know. It's all sorts of weird stuff. But it's pretty fun. It's pretty ridiculous. And also the polar opposite of Food Chain Magnate. All right, so those are the ones that I had on my mind the moment we started talking about food games, because I was trying to find two things that were very, very different, and that's what I got.
You got there.
So let's talk about a couple of the games that we have in front of us. Some of these are actually still in our review queue, which is exciting because I like them and I like playing them. And some of them are games that we've very recently reviewed, and some of them are games that we have had for a while.
I mean, if we're going to talk about games we've had for a while... Go Nuts for Donuts, we picked up not too long after we started this podcast.
Yep.
And we have played the heck out of it.
Yes. It is a fantastic family weight game. Our six-year-old loves to play Go Nuts for Donuts because it's this, I don't know.
We've always called it a voting game, which still doesn't quite capture the idea, but it is like a bid, except that if two people bid for the same item, it just disappears.
Right. So let's talk about some of the other stuff we've got. We've got those sushi games that we mentioned before. We have one of Claire's favorite games, which is Filler.
I really like Filler. I think Filler does the multi-use card thing really well in a way that I haven't seen in many other games. I've seen other food games with multi-use cards, but you're usually like laying them down on the table and then you can't use them anymore. So it's always this really strong push-pull. In Filler... part of what you're doing is building up a hand. And so you might use this card for a arrival time to work one time around. But then after you pick up your hand, you might use it as an ingredient the next time around.
All right. We also have games like Abandoned All Artichokes, which we've been talking about a ton.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Pop-Tarts already. And then we also have Cupcake Academy from Blue Orange.
So I'm going to admit this one is barely food themed. Really barely. I mean, it's Towers of Hanoi with cupcake liners.
I'll take it.
But it's cute and it's fun and it's a nice puzzle, which I'm noticing in all these food themed games, there are a couple of types of play that come up over and over and over again. And puzzle is not one of them. So that's a nice change.
And then back on the silly train, we've got Throw Throw Burrito.
And also on the silly train, we have In Vino Morte, which... Andrew is not particularly a fan of, nope. But I think it's just ridiculous. And I love that a game plays in like 2 minutes.
All right. So here's what we're going to do, Anitra. Out of everything that we have listed, we're going to pick two games that represent our favorite food themed games.
Okay.
And one game that we really want to play.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Do you want to go first or shall I go first?
Sure. You go first.
Okay. So the first game that I'm going to pick is a game that I'm selecting because I love the game and also because it's very utilitarian. It scales extremely well. It has a lot of variety. I don't know if I've ever talked to somebody who like just flat out doesn't like this game. It's easy to understand. And that game is Sushi Go Party.
That is a good choice. Of the three games in the Sushi Go family, this is definitely at the top of my list.
So Sushi Go is a fantastic gateway game for people who don't know if they're going to like hobby board games or hobby tabletop games or whatever you want to call them. It's a game that you can pick up for like $5 at Target when it's on sale. But if you play it a lot, you will use it up. There won't be enough variety in there for you to continue your plays. Sushi Go Party has all of the elements of Sushi Go and more. And because of that, it's really a superset, and it just is more great stuff, and there's more variety, and I just love it.
And it even has specific cards in there that work a lot better at a low player count, like 2 or 3 players, and ones that work a lot better at a high player count, like 6 or 7. That's part of what puts the party in Sushi Go Party, is you can customize it more to the group you're in.
Yeah, I didn't even really mention that. With Sushi Go Party, unlike Sushi Go, where you always play with the same deck, the game is essentially modular. You are selecting a set of cards that you will combine together and then shuffle together, and those are the cards you're going to play with. And the rulebook even has a series of variations on that that have kind of themed names. And if you go online, you can find even more of them, or you can just make up your own. There's so much flexibility there that anybody who has played Sushi Go and likes it, I mean, really, it's almost a no-brainer to pick up Sushi Go Party. So that's my number one game, Sushi Go Party.
All right. I don't want to give Game Right all the love, but I think my number one is going to be Abandon All Artichokes.
Sure.
Ever since we picked this up, I've had a lot of fun with it, and I like the idea of the deck deconstruction game. There's not much out there like it, and I like that you can approach it with lots of different kinds of strategies for what's really, on the face of it, a very simple game.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I love the fact that this is a game, and I've been saying this a lot lately, where you can pretty much just pick it up and go, and you don't need to spend time reading a bunch of rules. Even with a simpler game, you still have to spend time reading rules. And with Abandon All Artichokes, you really don't. You get 10 artichokes, you draw 5, you flip some cards over, you figure out what they do, you pick one up, you put one down, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the whole game. And it's so simple that I just love it. I don't understand what it is with Game Right and the tins. The tins are starting to bug me. I gotta be honest with you.
I'm gonna agree with you on that one.
Both Sushi Go Party and Abandon All Artichokes come in these tins. And, you know, I get it from a marketing perspective. They look great on the shelf, in the store. They are, stand out a little bit. They're not like, hey, every other cardboard game box that's here. But man, putting them on the shelf at home is kind of a pain. And, you know, maybe that's like totally a first world problem for us. But that's, I think, my biggest complaint about the games. And if that's the biggest complaint, then hey, but
then I'd say we're in pretty good shape. All right, then give me your number two favorite of all the food games we've played.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, do we consider Century Spice Road a food game?
I think you could, yeah.
Okay, then I have to go with Century Spice Road because it's a fantastic game. We talked in the first half of the show about Century Golem Edition. It's essentially the same game. I think Century Spice Road is the first game that we gave a 10 out of 10 on the Family Gamers website, or maybe we give it a 9.5 out of 10.
I think it was a 9.5.
It's great. It is a tremendous game. It works very well across all of the player accounts that it supports. Families can play it. More strategic gamers can play it. It's got a lot of modularity with Century Eastern Wonders and Century A New Age, A New World, whatever it's called. It's just a fantastic game that any board gamer should have on their shelf. Whether you have it in the Century Golem Edition model, which is the way we have it, or whether you have it as Century Spice Road itself, that has to be my number two. There's no way that I can pick anything else that we've got on our own table over that.
All right, that's fair. It's a real good game. All right, I got my number two.
Okay, what is it?
My number two is Filler.
Okay, sure. I mean, look, I enjoy playing Filler as well. I like the multi-use card thing. I like that tension when you have to decide whether you want to keep a card to perform an action or you have to play that card so that you can come in earlier in the day and get better cards.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand.
And on top of that, Filler has a really fantastic solo mode, which I didn't even mention before, but I've really enjoyed playing it because playing it solo feels just like playing a two-player game of Filler.
That's great.
But without you needing to make both sides of the decisions.
I completely understand and agree. And, you know, Filler is a game that our kids like to play, or at least Claire likes to play a lot, and Asher is willing to play. So there's automatically a few points in its favor because we know it's not something that we've got to bribe kids to get to the table, right? I mean, that's just reality.
Sure.
Okay, so now, out of everything that we've talked about, if all of these games were on a list, and we said, you can play one game, which game would you most want to play? What is that game?
Oh, am I going first this time?
Sure, why not?
Sure. Honestly, once I looked up Saffronito.
Oh, you took my choice.
I really want to play that game. Bruce, we need to play that game.
I can't believe you took my game. Whatever.
Well, that means we really should play it. We both are really intrigued by this idea of you got to flick coins onto the central mat. You have to collect sets of spices. It seems like a lot of fun. And it sounds like there's a little bit of Crokinole type thing in there where you try to flick other people's coins off of the spices you want.
I mean,
and Indian spices. Yes,
it's that part. I mean, I'll do the dexterity stuff, but I love the idea of the game about the Indian spices. All right, if I'm taking a step back, I have to recalibrate myself, and I'm gonna go with Food Fighters. I like the Kids Table Board Game stuff. Problem Picnic we also played, and we really I think struggled with that probably because of the age of the kids. I'm not really sure what it was there, but generally speaking, I really like their stuff. It was recommended by multiple people.
Yeah. Well,
which
and
has some weight going behind it.
And you like those kind of dueling games, you know, one-on-one.
I do.
Direct combat.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. So out of all these games, my choice on this one is going to be Food Fighters. That, and I can't spend 6 hours playing a game of Food Chain Magnate, which is reality. I mean, that speaks to me as well, but I'm going to go with Food Fighters.
All right. Well, that means that our top four food games right now are Sushi Go Party, Abandon All Artichokes, Century Spice Road, and Filler.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody can drop us a line on how we can get our hands on Saffronito or Food Fighters, we should really play those.
Absolutely.
Speaking of dropping us a line, you can find us on all the social medias, not really all of them, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at Family Gamers AA.
Yep, or you can join the Family Gamers community. Head over to thefamilygamers.com/community to get right into our Facebook community, or you can go to Facebook and search for the Family Gamers community, or you can go to facebook.com/groups/familygamersaa.
All the ways.
Mm-hmm. Or you can just send us direct email if you want to reach out to us. If you want to ask us questions about really anything that we've ever done or just questions that you might have, how we're dealing with this game schooling stuff that we've now been forced to really actively get involved in. Whatever your questions might be, if you don't want to ask publicly, you can ask us privately. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Or you can email me, Anitra, at thefamilygamers.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. And tell your friends.
Tell all of your friends.
Tell people who aren't your friends by leaving us a review at Apple Podcast or wherever you subscribe.
We're also on TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and now Amazon Music.
The increasingly poorly named Amazon Music.
Isn't that what you said last time I mentioned Amazon Music?
Yes.
It's like the MTV of online streaming services. I don't know. Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points or save up money to buy food-themed games and get hungry like I currently am.
Yeah, all this talk about food games has made me hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go make some dinner? I'm going to make tacos.
Oh, yes.
But until next week,
play games with your kids.